Episode 3 of The Two Jodies. Good to see you again, my friend.
Hey.
Have you seen video of Rudolph Ingram?
Oh, yes.
The 7-year-old kid from Florida. What does a 13.48 100 meter translate into? Because I'm trying to figure out what that is for a 100 yard dash time. I know it's really good for a 7-year-old.
Yes, he's got some good foot speed right there.
This young man's got perfect form.
That's one of the keys to running. You know, God-given talent and speed is bestowed upon a few of us. But yeah, the form and the technique with everything is the key to excelling at any endeavor athletically.
When he comes out of the blocks or off the starting line, yeah, he's got his head down, but within about 10 or 15 yards, that head starts to slowly come up.
Mm-hmm.
And then that chin is up and that chest is out and those
right.
arms are swinging like pendulums, as you
mm-hmm.
said. And man, he is on his toes. He's pulling through.
You know, the start in track is not dissimilar to the start in swimming. Those that stay in the water and lower longer before they come up and start working full speed are the ones that are going to go and move the fastest. You can't generate top-end speed. It comes over time, over a distance. Unless you're Dion, you're catching a punt in 2 steps, you can be the top speed. I mean, that is world-class.
Acceleration, yeah.
Yeah, and that's getting off real, real quick.
Ray Burris has done youth sports coaching for years. He had a baseball clinic and a workshop in Dallas-Fort Worth for a very long time. These days, he's the rehab pitching coach for the Phillies
mm-hmm.
and is off in spring training. One of the things that we talk about here on the program last week was preparation. What's the most important thing a young athlete, particularly a baseball player, can be doing right now this time of year?
The main thing is his conditioning. Build up your endurance. Most of the conditioning in spring training starts with short burst. You're in a position to anticipate the ball coming to you, so it's a short spurt. Getting your endurance and your stamina in shape is very important. And obviously throwing. Now, every organization is different, Jody. We throw a lot in our organization, the Phillies. And guys know, we call them in the offseason to tell them and ask how much they've been throwing, to check on them, make sure they're doing what they need to do and understand what the situation is going to be when you get here. If you come to spring training, you haven't thrown that much, you're going to be behind the 8-ball right off the bat. And most of the time, you end up getting hurt because you're trying to catch up and your arm is not going to be able to stand throwing out to 120 feet every day.
So long toss every day.
Every day, if you can. If you can't, 90 feet or more will suffice to get you extended and stretched out and working on fastball and change from 90 feet. 90 feet is to allow the athlete the feeling of throwing the ball where it looks like your fastball to get it there.
One of the things that people always seem to emphasize with Nolan Ryan was how much he worked on his legs. Should that be where a kid's focus is?
Absolutely. Our players are sent home at the end of the season with a workout program. They have a workout program. Now, it's up to them to understand the value of doing that. And like I said previously, without follow-up of checking to make sure they're doing what they're doing, that's part of showing that we care and making sure that they're ready to come in spring training, ready to go. Legs is very important because once your legs go as an athlete, then your career starts going downhill. And you look at Nolan Ryan, the longevity that he had at the major league level is really outstanding. It really is. To be a starter that long and throw that hard, you had to have good, strong legs.
Is it just a matter of running, or are there other things? We were talking last week that the best all-around exercise anyone can do at any time is probably jumping rope.
Jumping rope, squats. Another good thing is swimming. Swimming is very good. It works every muscle in your body. And a lot of times, you know, a player may not have access, but it's a combination of running and strength and conditioning.
What are your thoughts on pitch counts for young pitchers? Do you think that that's an important thing for the 8, 9, 10, 12-year-old kid?
I think when you go from 8 to 12, let's just go in a group, 8 to 12, 45 to 55 pitches, usually that should get him 3 innings or more. If he's efficient with his pitches and he's a strike thrower, he probably can get maybe 4 or 5 innings or go into the fifth. That's enough. That's enough. Give that body a chance. The reason I say that, Jody, is because from your 8 to 12 year olds, the growth plate within that young player is still developing. And the biggest issue with young pitchers is everybody wants to know how hard they're throwing. It's not about how hard you're throwing. It's about how correctly you're throwing. And everybody gets hung up on, I got to throw the ball hard. I got to throw the ball hard to be noticed, to get a scholarship, to be drafted. You know, pitchability is going to be recognized by a person who understands the game. A baseball person is going to understand pitchability. They're not going to look at velocity. If you got velocity, fine. But if you can't control it or command it, what good does it do you?
Greg Maddux comes to mind. Greg Maddux could put a ball exactly where he wanted and not particularly fast. I mean, he just put the ball exactly where he wanted to throw it.
Exactly. And he had movement. And movement comes from knowing how to spin the ball, knowing how to let the ball come off the index and middle fingers and get rotation from the release, and the other elements take over as the ball is traveling toward home plate. So it's about control and knowing how to go down an incline with your body.
When is the right age to start letting a pitcher throw the curve?
16, 17, depending on the development of the individual. Some guys may be 18 or 19. But again, it's about how do I throw it? This is the biggest issue. The correct way to throw a ball, the correct way to throw a curveball, the correct way to throw a changeup, the correct way to throw a slider and a fastball. Too much emphasis is based on how hard I'm throwing the ball. Now, velocity is fine if God put it in your body, but controlling the strike zone is another skill at a different level. Commanding the strike zone is the ultimate skill at any level.
Grip and slot and mechanics and repeating the same movement over and over and over.
Exactly.
And less to do with brute strength. Just changing the grip and working on different grips can accomplish pretty much the same thing as long as you can put the ball where you want it to go.
Exactly. Let's look at the elements here, the tangibles. Can you teach velocity, Jody?
No.
Neither can I. So why am I telling a kid, 12, 13, 14, that I'm going to show you how to throw the ball 99 miles an hour? Lord knows, if you could teach velocity, Jody, you wouldn't be doing the two Jodies.
So between outings, how long would you say, if a child gets out there, let's say he's 11, 12 years old, and he throws 50 pitches in a game, how long should a coach wait before he puts that child back out on the mound?
At least 3 days. At least 3 days. If you have a select team of 12 to 13 pitchers, you should have at least 7 to 8 that can pitch.
Softball, too. I mean, it's all about conditioning and it's all about self-discipline, because sometimes, you know, it's really hard to go out there and pull a kid off the mound and take the ball, hand it to somebody else. You don't want to do it. What about a player's head and getting inside a ball player's head? Because baseball, to me, more than any other, can mess with your head like no other sport.
Absolutely. Well, you got a lot of variables that come into play. First of all, developing a young player on how to get out of his own way is the trickle-down effect. More young pitchers have a tough time dealing with failure. And you play a sport in baseball where you got 70% failure rate. And that's tough. Developing that young player to understand you're going to fail, but it's the person that picks themselves back up has the mental toughness.
Is there any secret to spotting the difference between mental trouble and physical injury? I mean, is there a way you can clearly identify a player who's not just hurting internally, but externally, maybe something's wrong with her? Because we're seeing an uptick in, you know, youth injuries that we didn't used to see, elbow, shoulder injuries. I think there are more Tommy John surgeries now under the age of 18 than there ever were before.
Right.
How do we spot injury to the extent where we say, okay, you need to take some time out and get that fixed?
Well, here's the thing that's so prevalent in the industry today, which I really love. Technology is at its highest peak, and they're still developing techniques to help rectify or notice potential injuries. For instance, if you take the back of a young person's body, take your shirt off and take a video of his back and look at how his scapula moves in slow motion. You can anticipate an injury, but you can also identify where you need to build that scapula up so they're both are moving in a fluid manner and one's not moving differently than the other based on the throwing side that he throws the ball from. So there's technology that's rampant in the industry today, and it's really to the athlete's advantage, in my opinion, Jody, to be able to know how his body works. How does it work? Be able to feel how it works. Get the information on knowing how it works. Now, this is something I truly believe in from a coaching standpoint. I'm in a position where I develop athletes. I have to develop the individual before I can develop the player. What I mean by that is, if you're a pitcher in our organization and you just signed and was drafted last year, I got to spend time with you. A coach or a staff member needs to have empathy for the individual. If you don't have empathy for the individual, then you're not going to spend time with that individual to get to know what makes them tick. That's going to give you information on how to develop them as a pitcher, as a position player. So that means I got to spend time with you. I got to sit and talk to you, but I also got to be able to hear you and listen to you. Best coaches on the planet. I have an app on my phone called Huddle. It's like I'm making a movie. I can slow it down. I can go at a fourth of a speed, an eighth of a speed, slow motion speed. I can stop it, reverse it, stop it, go forward, stop it at the point I need to stop to show them where they need to be. It is unbelievable the apps that are out there that can help you be a filmmaker. And so those are tools that we were discussing a few minutes ago that have advanced the ability to help the learning curves of a young individual. Because you look at hearing, seeing, and feeling. Most of them don't hear because you use selective hearing, but they see and they can feel. So you're learning the learning curve of that individual. You're learning what makes them tick. You're learning their work ethic, how they go about their business. What is their intent when they're doing their strength and conditioning, when they're doing their stretching, when they're doing their running? What is their intent? Because that's part of your preparation. If you don't prepare during those events, then you're not going to have the intensity when you get between the lines and start competing.
Ray, it's always great to talk to you. I hope you have a great spring.
Same here, Jimmy.
And I hope you have a wonderful season. Congratulations again on working with the Phillies now. And I'm going to have to get a Phillies cap somehow. So
thank you very much, man.
God bless you, man. Thank you, Ray.
Thank you, man. All the best to your show. I appreciate you. Thank you.
You know what Ray was saying about rest between starts. Mm-hmm. We talked about this last time, how important it is for an athlete to get proper rest before practice, before games, good night's sleep and all that sort of thing. That might be the hardest thing for parents to finagle out of their kids' eyes.
Especially today's athlete. You know, you and I didn't have a video game console or a TV in our room with cable and the internet and a phone.
And it's just their world.
Okay.
You know, I run into this question with my daughter, who's now almost 15 years old, and she's in cheer. And there has to be commitment there, but the demands of the world they live in are very often at odds with that kind of commitment.
Oh, absolutely.
In order to just be social. I'm not sure that there is any way other than getting them to understand the necessity of self-discipline.
That's it.
You can't impose it on them. They have to somehow arrive at the conclusion that, okay, I got to take care of business before I get to all this other stuff, which they also, by the way, view as business too.
That's a critical part of their lives, and they're not going to give certain aspects of it up. But it's time allocation. You know, the thing you can't get any more of is time. So the emphasis should be upon how we spend our time every day. Are we maximizing the time that we have each day? If we're going to do all these things, then let's designate times to do them. And try to limit ourselves to certain things that take away time from maybe some more important things.
There's some really great young people I work with at Paul Quinn College in a speech class. This past Wednesday, one of their assignments was to get up and deliver a short 5-minute speech. And you could tell which ones had worked at home and practiced and which ones had practiced in front of a mirror.
Well, I think if you want to stand out in any endeavor you put yourself into, it takes time on your own outside of the team. Teams are only allowed so much time with you. Athletes and students that stand out in the classroom and on the athletic field put in extra time away from those places. So where do you want to be as a student and as an athlete? This is what's got to come from you.
As a coach, I've always found it very productive to get players to compare themselves to themselves. But most have had that long ride home. Well, when I was your age, I did this. And I actually had to talk to a parent not long ago and say, yeah, and I ran 10 miles before football practice every day.
Right.
You're not doing what I did. Well, the truth is, even if they weren't, which is arguable,
right,
you shouldn't be comparing them anyway.
No. You have to have the attitude of, if it is to be, it's up to me. I have no one to blame for anything that didn't go right for me. Looking inward. What could I have done? What could I have changed? And let's encourage that environment. I mean, you're going to fail more than you succeed in most things if you do a lot of things.
That's what Ray would say.
Well, and you're considered successful hitting 300 in baseball.
Yeah.
How do we overcome disappointment of not having the outcome we perceived? Looking inward, you can find the answers to that.
The rapper Plies, who actually played college football, if memory serves, before he became a performing artist, had some really cool thoughts on Twitter recently about self-starting.
Yes.
And not depending on someone else to light your fire. If you have a fire, you have to take care of that fire. You can't wait for somebody else to come along and feed it. Here's what he had to say.
All my young athletes, I know some of y'all may unfollow me after this, but I'm cool with that. But if your parents, your guardians got to always ask, is you going to workouts? Did you work out today? Wake up, we running late. If they got to do all that, man, you ain't ready to be no athlete, man. Because when you ready to be an athlete, you make things happen on your own. Ain't nobody got to micromanage you, man. Ain't nobody got to stay on top of you, especially you 15, 16, 17 years old. It's too many hungry kids out here that want this. You ain't doing them but wasting everybody's time when you got to be micromanaged. People trying to make you be an athlete. And it's a difference. When someone trying to make you be an athlete, it's totally different than when you want to be an athlete. So if you got to be micromanaged and somebody got to hold your hand on a day-to-day basis or every other day, all you doing is putting yourself at the back of the line, man. It's too many hungry kids out here that want it. So if you got to be micromanaged, save everybody the headache and the hassle, man, and find something else to do because you ain't doing them a wasting everybody's time.
There are kids who start later. I mean, we were talking about Aeneas Williams who didn't start playing football until he was actually in college. If you want to go back further than that, guys like Harvey Martin who didn't start playing until he was in college.
Or Billy Joe went to the NFL. Didn't he come off the basketball
court? Billy Joe Dupree, absolutely true.
And some other guys have been like that, but they were athletes in sports. Maybe the skill set transition wasn't so great for certain elite level athletes.
And they had something inside. They had some motivating factor that kicked it up a notch over everyone else.
Well, you got to want to and love to compete if you want to be at the superstar level. You got to love to compete. You don't care who's on that schedule, who's you're going against. You are licking your chops to compete. And that's in practice every day and whoever we're playing against in ball games.
They have to decide whether they've done all they can, whether they've given all they can, whether they've put out the effort.
Right. That's the impact we want to and love to make on young lives.
So let's talk about stretching for a minute because we talked about this briefly last week. I realized not that long ago that I was doing it completely bass-ackwards.
Okay.
I was doing the post-game stretching, the lengthening of the muscles. I was doing that before practice. I'd have my soccer players touching their toes, doing the hurdler's stretch, all of that sort of thing, rather than warming up.
Right.
When did that philosophy change? It's been at least 20, 25 years.
I don't know that it's been that long, but it's certainly gone to what they call a dynamic warm-up, where you want to loosen up the muscles and joints, get the heart rate beating faster, and raise the body temperature. Instead of being cold, it's called warm up for a reason. So the static stretch went away a while back. Now it looks great when your whole team's lined up from the 50 to the goal line across, sitting and leaning. And now a lot of teams are combining that dynamic with some static movement, and that's fine as long as you initiate with dynamic movement. So instead of leaning out and touching your toes, you got to be walking and lifting your legs or in a gym setting, just holding the wall and just lifting your toe up and down.
Replicating the movements you're actually going
to
perform.
Yeah, and so you're trying to loosen those muscles up before you use them. We generally go 5 to 8 minutes for a warm-up, combining that with some cardio. So if you're on an athletic field, you know, you're doing lunges and rotating. You're doing high knees. You're doing heel-ups. You're doing running karaoke.
Grapevines, all of that good stuff.
Yeah, and then you do build-ups, half speed, three-quarter speed, full speed. Then you have them backpedal and run forward. So you're trying to mimic a lot of the movements that are going to be on the athletic field in that pregame dynamic warm-up.
One of the challenges every coach faces is making sure the whole roster gets there early enough to do all that before the game, because we've all seen that family run in at the last minute just before kickoff. You just can't stress how important it is.
Now, that kid's probably on pure adrenaline, and he'll be ready to go because he's late and he's been screaming at his parents the whole time to get there. So his body temperature and heart rate are already up.
Well, one would certainly hope, but
yeah,
man, you know,
I've seen that.
To get everybody there and on the same page as early as you can.
Well, it is important to get them all there, do it the same way every day in practice.
Having a 5:30 practice, 6 o'clock practice is so tough because not every parent can get off work, get home, get the kid changed, get them to practice. I always wanted the whole team there 30 minutes before start of the game. After the game is over, after practice is over, that warm down, that stretch out.
I encourage everyone, stretch every night. Static stretch before they go to bed. They've been active all day. Even if they've already done it once after competition or a workout, The more flexible you are, the better athletic performance you can have.
It's a great time of year. The weather's turning nice.
Yes.
It's time to get out there for spring training, for baseball, mm-hmm. for football.
That's a lot of fun.
Basketball's going on.
March Madness here.
Have you seen the field at Globe Life Field?
Haven't yet.
They have the turf put down.
Oh, nice.
All right, man. Appreciate
it. Thank you, Dean.
Thank you, man. Love you, brother.
Love you.